This is Indie Media on Air for the week of May 8, 2006. We are the students from Cal State University Northridge. I'm Yichen Lu.
I'm Suki Chong.
I'm Tripon Gurnak.
My name is Dmitry Hubenko.
The topic of our today's show is the immigration debate in the United States. You are listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and streaming worldwide at kpfk.org.
Over 650,000 people turned to the streets in Los Angeles on May 1st to protest against an immigration bill. If this bill is passed by the Congress, undocumented immigrants will be criminalized. Today, you are going to hear the opinions which usually are not mentioned in the mainstream media. Workers organizers, immigrant activists, and academics will explain their position in an immigration debate. But first, we would like to give voice to people who peacefully marched through downtown Los Angeles a week ago.
They're not criminal. I don't think anyone that comes to the United States as an immigrant from any country, I don't think that they're coming in here for the wrong reasons. I think they're coming to work so that they can provide for their families, and I don't think that's a crime at all.
The most important message for them or for all the people is to understand, you know, we need to be together. Because if we want to do some difference, you know, they do everything they want. And now, together, we're going to tell them, you know, if you don't want to help us, you know, we're going to be together and we're going to make the difference in there.
Well, the issue of importance to legalize immigrants is something that really needs more discussion, is something that really needs to be discussed more. The importance of it is all over the place. Everyone's talking about why, what's going on, and why we need to legalize and not legalize. But the underlying issue is the attack on immigrants. And attacks on immigrants happen every time something's going wrong with the country economically or politically. There's always a scapegoat. There's always someone to blame. And this time the immigrants are being blamed for it. And that's why I'm here, because it's not so much necessarily the particular issue, but it's the way that's going about it, which is attacking. Right, it's attacking the people.
Quiero decirles que venimos a trabajar, no somos criminales.
That we come here to work, but we're not criminals.
Y estaremos aquí juntos hasta el final.
We'll be here together until if
final.
If final, I can't say anything. To the end.
The thing is, the problem in our country is not a good opportunity in our country. That's why it doesn't matter what we came to USA, you know.
That's why. And do you get a lot of money by working in the U.S.?
Yes, one of the main things, you know. We have a work right here. We support our family and our country.
I think the answer of sending everyone back home and locking the gates is an easy answer to a very difficult question. I think we're more intelligent than that.
You listen to the participants of the May 1st rally in Los Angeles. These voices belong to very different people: teachers, students, cleaning ladies, and day laborers who turned to the streets to express their support of the immigrants' cause. And now, Miguel Morales, the representative of Instituto de Educación Popular del Sur de California, will tell about the life of day laborers, most of whom are undocumented immigrants, and about the media coverage of this problem.
Day laborers, men, women, because they're also women, looking for work on a daily basis. They gather at corners, parking lots of Home Depots or supply stores, And the main way of gaining an income is just waiting for work at these places, you know, and doing anything from general labor, cleaning a construction site, cleaning gardens, to doing very skilled work, painters, people that know how to work with construction and stuff like that. Yeah, so it's a very broad broad category. It's not just one specific job type or one specific gender, but, you know, it's very broad. Many different types of people wait for work at the corners. A lot of them do send their money back home. Like I said, they leave their wives, their children, the rest of the relatives, and come here to provide that monetary income that they can't receive in their home countries. A lot of them live in large groups in small apartments. 4, 5, 6, 8 people living in a 1-2-bedroom apartment, a single. That way they save a lot on their expenses here in the United States, and they use most of the money to send back. My personal analysis is this. In our home countries, we can't survive with the money we earn because of economic reasons. Economic reasons don't depend on me, don't depend on them. They depend on who moves the market. You know, we live on a capitalist free trade market. So whoever moves the market has control over the wages, has control over the lifestyles and life possibilities that the population has, right? So I think that since we are, you know, dependent on those conditions, that the people managing those conditions have the freedom to move their capital everywhere they want. So we as people working for them or under them should also have the ability to move around and be free as we please. The market is international, knows no borders. We shouldn't feel no borders as well, you know. We should have that freedom to move unless we want to tear, you know, down this capitalist system and start something else. Well, you know, then we can do something else. But for now, we should have the ability to move freely and, you know, and follow our needs, follow the lifestyles that we want to have.
But American probably may say, that's your argument. Ours different.
Yes.
And they think like, you broke the law, why should we care?
Yes, I know. And that comes with comfort. That comes with knowing that your lifestyle is very nice and you don't want to give it up. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to give free education, childcare, and improve the conditions of life of, you know, 11 million, 20 million people, of course your condition of life is going to suffer, you know. And I think that's the problem in this country. We're very complacent. A lot of people have problems with the war and want to fight against the war, but they don't know how without, you know, giving up some of their privileges. Now, when it comes to laws and, you know, we broke the law, well, laws are created by people in power. And these people in power create laws in favor of themselves, right? This country, this territory, this piece of land used to be inhabited by, you know, native people. Native people were displaced. Treaties were enacted to protect them. These treaties have always been ignored by the United States government, you know. So there's certain laws put into place that aren't, you know, followed. And then the laws that I think, you know, benefit them are very much, you know, respected and very much upheld, you know. And I think a larger problem in this country is media. Media is controlled by just so few corporations, and the message is the same. And, you know, that's all we have available to us when it comes to news, when it comes to information, is these things by corporate companies. And I think that's where we lose our power. When we don't have access to this direct information, we don't have access to counter stories, you know. And yeah, that's why we grew up with this consensual idea that we should uphold these laws, and these people are breaking the law and we shouldn't be listening to them, you know. The problem is big. The problem is not just HR 4437, day laborers. The problem is global. I mean, and we see the same things we're seeing here. We see it in Africa. We see it in Spain. We see it in Europe. You know, people being displaced from their home countries, mainly because of economic reasons and having the need to move elsewhere and then being stopped as bodies. You know, they want our labor. They want our force, but they don't want our ass as people. And that's problematic. That's very problematic. I think media is part of the problem. The the way these issues are portrayed in the media, one, very minimal, right? Very minimal access to it. It's not out there. What we hear are, you know, Kobe Bryant stories. What we hear are scandals in the White House, Michael Jackson, you know, very useless information. And just one example of how media distorts things. The rally, the march of March 25th, was not 500,000 people. It was a million and a half people. It wasn't just Broadway, it was Hill, Flower, all these streets being taken. The camera shots that we saw that day were just zoomed in and just small pockets of people. Very simple details, but it's in the details where I think that this information can be exemplified. The coverage of, you know, this million and a half people converging in downtown was given 5-10 minutes at most. And then we move on to other stories. The issue is not discussed. Right. The march was very peaceful, very clean. I think it was very positive. Right. And it wasn't given so much airtime. Now you have those students walking out onto the freeways, walking out with Mexican flags and chanting. These are kids. They're frustrated. They're out there. They're angry. And they put out this energy. And that's taken up by the media so well. We have so much coverage, so much aerial shots of these kids taking up the freeway. Negative, what would be considered negative acts, what would be considered acts of a rebellion. Now so much attention and seeing these Mexican flags and saying, oh, see, here you are trying to invade us. When you had a million and a half people marching with American flags, right? Just a very simple example of how media, I think, you know, manipulates information. And it manipulates information because it maintains the status quo. You know, these people owning these corporations, major corporations, are people also owning other corporations. It's just one closed circle of people, you know, controlling the capital, the information, the population of the country. I definitely think we live under some sort of oligarchy or some sort of, you know, messed up system. We don't live in a democracy, you know, and I think that's media's large role. Telling us we live in a democracy, telling us we live in this order and in this lawful nation, when in reality we don't, you know.
It was Miguel Morales from Instituto de Educación Popular del Sur de California. You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and streaming worldwide at kpfk.org.
Our next guest is an activist of the Multi-Ethnic Immigrant Workers Organizing Network, or MEWON, Liz Sanwood. Liz will talk about the Temporary Workers Program, which is discussed in Congress, as well as racism in which the recent anti-immigration initiatives are rooted.
It's the position of our organization that guest worker programs are not good, that it's kind of a way out, a way out for George Bush to pass some kind of what he thinks is amnesty, but it's not really amnesty. It's like a fake out, right? And basically temporary worker programs, we've seen them in the past in the United States with the Bracero programs, where in a lot of other countries like Korea and you know, other like Mexico and the Philippines have experience in these guest worker programs where supposedly you're bringing a group of people in from a developing country to learn a certain skill set or to provide a temporary base of labor. And then the idea is that they go back, right? Mm-hmm. But most of the times, I think the reality is that there's not that much to go back to, right, in our developing countries. And most folks end up staying here for longer than just a temporary, meaning it could be 10, 15 years. Temporary doesn't mean just 1 year, right? And so I think people end up having families here, you know, they end up having lives here, and it's really hard to move. And I know a lot of cases of people, even back then when we had the Bracero program, where people would have children, a lot of those Braceros were forced to be deported, and then their children were left fatherless or, you know, without parents here in the United States, right? And I think what we're seeing is the same thing. We're going back to those days where people are being deported, but a lot of us are in mixed citizenship status families, right? Some where the kids could be one could be documented, one could be undocumented, and then one parent could be documented and the other one, you know, and so really, and there's could be like grandparents and all these other things that come into the mix where a lot of things that will happen is we have to take into account that it's splitting families apart. And I think the larger issue with temporary worker programs is that they just don't work, you know, and I think the temporary workers programs don't benefit workers, they benefit corporations or companies, right? And who wants this temporary worker program? And really, is Bush really looking out for immigrants who are coming from Mexico or from Asia, who are from developing countries? Like, is this really helping them? And we feel like if you really wanted to support workers in these countries, we need to have more fair trade policies that, you know, eliminate the attack on our countries, right? And I know Jesse Jackson just wrote an amazing editorial in the Chicago Sun-Times last week where he says, you know, we should be attacking poverty and not attacking immigrants. And I think he talks about the larger issue of that immigrants wouldn't have to come over here illegally. Like, no one wants to leave in the middle of the night or, you know, leave their fat kids behind, leave their whole country, come to a foreign country where they don't speak the language, they don't know anything. No one wants to do that. But most people in the world are forced to do that. And some people have to cross oceans, right? With people coming from Asia, if they get deported, it's difficult to come back, you know? And so we have an example of the Korean Resource Center has, I think he's 16 or 17 years old, and his parents got deported back to Korea. And so he's here by himself because he's a citizen. And, you know, it's going to be very, very difficult for them to be reunited.
But he decided to stay.
Right. But it's also, I mean, he's grown up his whole life here, and I don't think he would consider himself Korean, right? And I think the reality in a lot of these, even Salvadoran or Central American youth too, a lot of them have been deported back because their parents are undocumented and they never had an opportunity to get amnesty. And so what we see is a lot of these children who are now adults are deported back. They never lived in that country. And they're in a country where they don't speak that language, right? I mean, they look Salvadoran, right? We look Korean. But if I had to be deported at 16 back to Korea, I wouldn't know what the hell to do, you know? And it's very confusing. And I think what Bush has to realize is that this is the reality for many immigrant families, is that it's not just a ethnicity or nationality problem or about, you know, what's on paper, but it's also an issue of generational issues, of cultural issues, and that especially when we're dealing with families and children, that children have a whole different reality living here in the United States than people who immigrate here. And to separate those things or force the children to leave what they know is a totally different situation. And I know here there's a lot of, like especially in the Korean community, a lot of children don't even know that they're undocumented until they try to get their driver's license, right? And then, because most parents don't want to say, oh, by the way, how do you have this conversation with your child? Like, you know, honey, we're not citizens, you know? And I don't think kids can understand that, right? And I think it's not, and I think especially in Asian communities, it's not something that you publicize. And I always use the example of, we have a very, very close family friend that we've known forever. Like, we, you know, all of us as kids, we all grew up together, and until last year we didn't know they were undocumented, their whole family, until they had problems with the kids going to college, because, you know, they're not able to go to college and receive financial aid, and they're very they don't have enough money to pay for college. And, you know, there's the same case with a lot of the members at Kiwa. Like, the kids want to get driver's license, and you know, to grow up in LA and not have a driver's license is like this huge rite of passage, right? And that's usually the time where the parents have to tell the kids, this is why you can't get a driver's license, you know? And I think as a child, like, it's very, especially a teenager, very, very difficult to understand and get when you grew up your whole life in this country, and then at 16, you see everyone getting driver's license and you can't get it. It just doesn't make sense, I think. And I think the children end up resenting the parents, you know, and like, but I think what a lot of those teens don't understand is for those parents to get citizenship, it's going to take years. Like, even if you, even if an undocumented person marries another person, there's a list of countries that it takes almost 20 years for you to get citizenship for your family member, right? And usually the path for, if you have someone who's a citizen living here, it's usually easier. It's in the past, it's been easier to get your citizenship. But now, if you come from Mexico, the Philippines, Korea, and certain other countries, it's very, very difficult. You have a longer waiting period to get documented. So, I mean, in the end, temporary work programs don't work. And I think Bush is just serving a corporate interest and not the interests of families and workers, because it's just not realistic. I feel that the root of that doesn't even have to do with national security, but it has to do with racism. And I think there have been some people who have been pointing that out. A lot of like African American leaders have been able to point out that this immigration isn't really about security, it's about racism. And to be able to say that you feel insecure because certain groups of people are here, right? And, you know, and I think it's, there's a deeper level of racism that we're not talking about. I think people say it's an issue of national security because that's playing on people's fears who aren't exposed to people of other races, you know, and that, but I think the reality is that, you know, no matter how many fences you build, no matter how many airport checkers you have, that until the United States has better foreign policy, better trade policy, and decreases poverty in other countries, that's the number one way to create more security in the United States. It doesn't mean no wall can stop anybody who has a death wish from entering this country. And I think, you know, the only way to prevent that is through better foreign policy and better aid to other countries and trade having more fair trade policies. And I think the media, the mainstream media, and a lot of, you know, conservative Republicans are spinning it in a way that creates fear and making people feel secure when we're not secure at all, right? And I think we won't be secure until all those things happen, and no wall or whatever will fix that. And I think they're trying to sell this idea that if we keep out undocumented immigrants, that that's the answer. But no answer is that simple, you know? And I think everything in this age of globalization, it's all related, you know? Everything, all the foreign policy, the military war, the war we're waging in other countries, even the verbal attacks that our president makes against certain leaders in other countries, you know, economic boycotts, you know, and opening up our market and closing other markets for trade, I think is just creating this whole level of tension in the world that the U.S. is the focus of that attention, right? And I don't think we ever address the reason, you know, we talk about, okay, people obviously want to attack the United States, but why? And then we have to keep asking, what's the deeper why, right? And I think that's where we'll get the real answer of how to have national security. And I think another part of it is that I think that people, again, like, we don't like to think about the benefits we get from on the backs of undocumented workers. And I think, you know, most of the time people are saying, oh, they're attacking my jobs and my healthcare. But the reality is, like, most of the immigrants we work with that are undocumented have no healthcare. Hardly any of them are even going to the emergency room. Some of them don't even like to go to their children's schools because they're afraid of being discovered as being undocumented and being separated from their families. So I think, you know, in reality, when we look at hard numbers, like, immigrants are not using the healthcare system, and they're not a burden to the American economy. And I think a lot of the reason why the economy can run the way it is and why we can have cheaper clothes, right? Why we can have all these sales on clothes, why we can have, you know, a very quick and cheap food, or all these things is on the back of undocumented workers. And I think if these same people who are proposing that, you know, these workers are such a burden are willing to change their own lives, pay higher for things, change, you know, standards of living for all people, not just the rich, then I think, you know, if they're willing to make that sacrifice, then they can make that accusation. But I think until that time, I don't see those people willing to make that sacrifice. You know, I don't see, like Senator or Representative Sensenbrenner being willing to give up the luxuries of his own life and his family's life, even for a middle-class American, you know, or like a poor white person that's a citizen. And I think the issue is that there's still a high level of poverty, even if we take out the number of undocumented workers. There's still a high rate of poverty amongst whites, right? White poor, and then also African Americans that, you know, like, and they don't care about that. You know, they just care about turning this into a very like racially divided issue. So for me, I think the root of all those attacks are actually people, without being directly racist, being able to say and do very racist things.
You are listening to an interview with Liz Sanwood, the representative of Miwon. This is Indie Media on air on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara. We'll be back in a moment with the rest of the interviews.